Drive time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, seize the moment. Talk to a financial broker today about a Zurich pension.
Now, the government has pledged to end direct provision by 2024 and replace it with a system that would see asylum seekers get their own door accommodation after 4 months. The white paper, published earlier today, proposes a move from privately run accommodation to a not-for-profit state-led approach. There has been international condemnation of the current system that was set up as a temporary stopgap over 20 years ago. Well, earlier I spoke to Roderick O'Gorman, Minister for Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, and I asked him what he can do for those people in the system now who cannot wait 4 years for reform.
Look, I'll be writing to all the current residents of the direct provision system next week, outlining what we're seeking to do with the new proposal. But in order to provide, I suppose, assistance immediately, we're looking to put a lot of investment into the processing of international protection applications. And my colleague Minister Helen McEntee is leading out on that to actually allow decisions be made in a much quicker time, so people aren't left in the system for such a long period of time. We're also bringing in HICWA to undertake monitoring of the existing direct provision centres across the country. And then there's a range of other improvements bringing in. We've brought in earlier access to the labour market so people can take up jobs in Ireland within 6 months of arriving in the country. We're also going to make it easier for people to get bank accounts and driver's licences. So those are some of the things that will make life better for people in the system at the moment.
So can you talk to me just a little bit more about those? Because Catherine Day, we were speaking to you on this show actually when Catherine Day published her report into direct provision and what should be done with it a couple of months ago, and she made a point of a couple of things that could be done immediately. She said the allowances currently paid to people in direct provision could be increased from January 2021. Will that be done?
We always keep the allowances under review in terms of each budget. We didn't make an increase in the allowance in budget 2021, but obviously we look at that in the context of the budget each year. As I outlined in the white paper today, we will be introducing a new international protection payment for people who are living independently in phase two of the new international protection service.
So that won't be done. Applicants should be entitled to apply for driving licences, you mentioned that, and also bank accounts. When will that happen? Because Catherine Day said that a couple of months ago, she said that could be done immediately.
It can't be done immediately, unfortunately. It requires the driver's licences requires primary legislation. The Cabinet gave approval for that legislation. It's coming in the new Transport Miscellaneous Provisions Bill. So I'd hope that would be passed in the next number of months in the Oireachtas.
And bank accounts?
And bank accounts, the Department of Justice are engaging with the Banking and Payments Federation on the issue of bank accounts. So we'd hope to see substantial progress on that in the next number of months and provide residents of direct provision with access to bank accounts.
OK, so on that basis, would you be confident that residents of direct provision would have access to bank accounts and also be entitled to apply for driving tests this year in 2021?
I think we'll be able to achieve both of those this year, yes.
Okay. Can we move on then to the new system and what you're planning? The proposal is to build 6 reception centres. Do we know at this stage where they will be built, how that will be decided, and is there enough time to complete all that within the time frame?
Yeah, we'll be engaging with the City and County Managers Association and with local authorities across the country. We'll be designing a settlement key to decide what are the areas where we place both the reception and integration centres where people will live for 4 months in phase one and subsequently then the community accommodation that they'll live in phase two. So this will be allocated across the country in conjunction with local authorities and the county and city management agency.
And in terms of when they will be built, are you confident, given the current squeeze on housing supply, on the construction sector, on all of that, that this is possible to do within the time frame?
I am confident we're going to have the assistance of the housing agency, who are very eager to get involved in the project of providing accommodation for those in international protection and bringing in their expertise in this area. We've also been engaging with a number of the AHB's approved housing bodies. And again, they bring a very significant amount of experience to site allocation, to site acquisition and the development and bringing to fruition of housing projects. projects.
Okay.
So in terms of delivery of both the reception and integration centres and the subsequent community accommodation, we're confident we can deliver by December 2024.
The housing bodies might be very enthusiastic about it, but the Department of Housing isn't very enthusiastic about it, or is it? Because a couple of months ago, when Catherine Day published her own report, they said the own door accommodation system was not workable or implementable, that it would have a significant negative effect on the ability of homeless people to access housing, and that it would lead to a situation where homeless families and people are competing for accommodation with people coming from direct provision.
And that was in reference to the proposal in the Day report that people in direct provision would have homeless HAP housing assistance payments. We decided not to go with that model in the end. What we're going for is a model that provides state build, either state directly building or buying or supporting AHBs to provide provide housing. So the Department of Housing was critical of one element of the Day report. I had my own concerns about the proposal to go with a model that's based on HAP. I know a lot of the NGOs had a concern about that model as well. So it was decided in the end to take a different approach. And the Department of Housing and particular Minister O'Brien have been extremely supportive in providing access mechanisms of funding for housing like CAS, like CAF, and of course the access to the housing agency
okay.
as well.
And in terms then of getting the six reception centres built, we have seen across the country over the last couple of years local people who are very unhappy, a local protest about direct provision centres under the privately run system. Do you anticipate that there will be similar problems, or that councils will be pushing against it?
Well, look, we're going to put in place measures to try and avoid those problems. There will be a national information campaign about what we're seeking to do with the white paper and explaining the two-phased approach to accommodation. So that will go out on a national basis. But when we decide to locate either a reception and integration centre or the community accommodation in a particular area, we'll engage with the local community, with the local authorities, with other state agencies and NGOs in that particular area to explain what we're doing. I think this has worked well recently in the terms of new direct provision centres opened in Galway and also in Letterkenny. There was substantial engagement between my department and the local authorities in those areas. And what we've actually seen is quite strong community networks building up around these direct provision centres, these kind of friends of the centre networks, which actually helps to integrate those services, both
okay.
state services, but local community services with residents of these centres.
Okay. In terms of the processing time then for asylum seekers or people seeking direct provision, at the moment it takes a minimum of 18 months for them to have their application processed, even longer for a final decision to be made. This paper says applications should be processed within 6 months. But I mean, you know, we all know they should be processed within 6 months. Is there anything to ensure they will be processed within 6 months?
Well, the processing of applications will continue to be undertaken by the Department of Justice, and they've put significant additional resources into the early stages, particularly in terms of putting in place an IT system. At the moment, the system is very paper-based. It's quite ponderous. They'll also be putting additional resources into both the International Protection Office and the Appeals Tribunal to enable both of those bodies speed up the rate at which they make decisions, both at first and appeal instance.
This has been going on for years, hasn't it, Minister, in terms of trying to get these applications processed in a faster time frame, and nothing that has been done to this point has achieved that aim. So are you confident that, you know, within 6 months' time, applications for direct provision will be processed within 6 months?
I think, you know, you said nothing's been done, and you cited it's an 18-month period. Like, you know, a number of years ago, it was a 4 or 5 year period. So numbers are coming down from those appallingly high levels. But we do, in order for the new system to work, we do have to continue to bring down the processing time. That's why the Department of Justice, since the Day report came out last October, has had a specific team put in place to oversee the implementation of the various recommendations that Catherine Day brought forward. The Department of Justice has committed to continuing to keep their success in terms of reducing numbers currently in the system under review. And there'll be a review taken out in Q3 of 2022. And at that point, we can determine if there's additional measures needed so we can make sure we get that processing time down as quickly as possible.
All right. And then in terms of the current backlog, as I mentioned, 7,000 people in direct provision at the moment. And Dr. Catherine Day in her advisory report said that to replace the system, any effort to do that will fail unless the large backlog of people currently awaiting a decision is substantially reduced. Now, I think you said Helen McEntee is working on allowing decisions to be made in a much quicker time frame. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. As I say, they've put significant resources into a new IT system, into new staffing to enable those
decisions to be made. Is that for the backlog as well?
Quickly. Yes, that's for the backlog as well. And as I say, we're going to review that in Minister McEntee's department in conjunction with my own department. We'll look at the situation in 2022 to see if there are additional measures that are needed at that point. We have put significant resources in. We want to see to the extent to which they reduce the processing time, but we're conscious of the importance of this particular element, so that's why we're undertaking that review in Q3 of 2022.
And for people who have been in the system already for more than 2 years, is there any plan to allow them leave to remain as recommended by Dr. Day for 5 years?
Well, look, that element will be reviewed in Q3 of 2022. Right now, we're focused on actually speeding up the processing times, and we think that'll bring real benefit to people who are in the system right now and those who enter it subsequently.
And why are you waiting until Q3 2022? You know, that's almost 2 years away for people who are in the direct provision system at the moment, who have been stuck there for years, who are really having an awful time of it and who want a decision.
Because we are putting those additional resources into the Department of Justice to speed up the processing time, and we want to give those the opportunity to work and allow people get their decisions on status more quickly.
Are you confident they will work, or do you think we may be sitting here in 2 years' time having the same conversation?
Look, I think the plans in terms of a better IT system are really important, and it's something that has been identified as a major barrier at the moment. We're also looking at providing enhanced elements of legal aid as well, so people have the best legal advice at the start of the system. We're also looking at things like translation services as well, so again, that no mistakes take place in initial applications that undermine or delay an asylum seeker's application.
You're confident?
I am confident, yeah. But as I say, we are bearing in mind that things can come up, and we're taking that opportunity to look at the system in 2022.
The retired judge, Brian McMahon, was speaking earlier. He said there have been too many reports on direct provision. We need action, he said. Will this be the last report on direct provision?
I hope it is, and that's certainly my intention. That's why we've made it as comprehensive as possible. It's not looking just at the issues of accommodation. It's also looking at the issues of wraparound supports for people in the process. And most importantly, we're looking to ensure that people get integrated into Irish society from day one.
OK, I just bring you back briefly, Minister, to the phase two of all of this, which is when own door accommodation will be provided for people. Can you just explain to me why that doesn't cause a problem when it comes to own door accommodation being provided for homeless people? And we know there's pressures on that system already. Why, if you're now planning to do an extra job as such to provide own door accommodation for direct provision residents, why does that not take from somebody else, if you understand me? Why does it not cause
attention? Yeah, well, look, it's we're very clear that the measures we're taking is in conjunction with the wider measures to deal with the housing crisis in the country. And the measures in terms of the supply of housing will be led by my department, not by the Department of Housing. And that's why it's really useful for us to have the support of the Housing Agency and the support of IHBs in terms of their know-how, their technical knowledge of the delivery of housing. But it doesn't in any way interfere with the very strong focus of the Department of Housing on the delivery of many types of housing, but particularly the 50,000 additional social housing units that are committed to under the programme.
Okay. We might turn to the issue of the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. And last night on Primetime, we heard stories of children who were really desperately abused while they were in foster care. Last night also the Professor Conor O'Mahony, Special Rapporteur on Child Protection, said that those children, well now adults, they are entitled to a state apology and they are entitled to redress. Do you agree?
Look, I think, as you say, the abuse that was shown on the primetime programme was absolutely appalling. And many of these children would have come through the mother and baby home system. And in his apology, in his state apology, the Dáil referenced children who had been boarded out. But I think it is important to note that there were children who were boarded out who came through other of the state systems for dealing with children during the 20th century. What I would say is in terms of redress, those children who were boarded out, who came through the mother and baby home system, their cases will be considered. My department has set up an interdepartmental group which is looking at the question of redress at the moment. No final decision on redress has been made yet. We hope to have that report by the end of April. But I'd also, and I'm hoping to have the opportunity to meet with some of those who took part in the programme last night, particularly those who came through systems other than the mother and baby institution system, to, I suppose, understand both their experiences but also understand their engagement with the state since then and difficulties or barriers that have been put up in front of them in intervening years.
So they will be considered, though, that is the key aspect of this for them, I suppose, they will be considered as part of the redress.
Right now, I can only speak to those who came through mother and baby institutions. They will be considered as part of redress. As I say, I'm aware that there are a significant number of survivors of being boarded out who didn't go through the mother and baby institutions. And as I say, I want to meet with them in the first instance to understand more their own particular experiences.
So that sounds like they won't be considered.
What I'm saying is, I can't make any decision here and now in terms of how we can specifically address their situation. What I'm saying is I want to meet with them so I can better understand and engage with government on this issue.
On the wider issue of the Mother and Baby Homes Commission, it is due to wrap up at the weekend despite calls from representatives of survivors of mother and baby homes for that not to happen. And I just wonder, Minister, you know, these women and children of the mother and baby homes, they've been silenced for decades, haven't they, in terms of what they went through. And then they waited years for this commission to investigate and report. And very many of them, well, they were firstly, they were insulted by the leak of the report before it was published. And then they were left baffled, wondering why they didn't get a copy of the report before the Taoiseach decided to do a state apology. And then many of them, very many of them, were horrified by the language and the findings of the report, which didn't reflect their lived experiences. And then they were infuriated by the news that their testimony had been deleted without their knowledge or their consent, as far as they believed or they understood. And they'd another fight on their hands with the state yet again to make sure that those testimonies could be found, refound, discovered. Many of the survivors of these homes have been re-traumatised by the government's handling of all of this. Do you think the government owes them an apology?
Well, look, I understand how difficult the last number of months have been for survivors, having met with and spoke with significant numbers. They've told me about the feelings that they've had in terms of each of the elements that you I outlined. Certainly in terms of the leak, I apologise for that at the time. It was an absolutely disgraceful situation that key elements of the report came out into the media in that particular way. But I think the government has also very clearly articulated what it is going to do to assist survivors of these institutions in terms of the 22 actions that we've outlined. And again, in my own engagement with survivors, these are the issues that they have focused on. They want to see access to their information. They want to see some measure of redress and support for their medical needs. Mm. They want to see appropriate treatment of burial sites.
They absolutely do. And I understand
that the government are acting on.
I do understand that. But I'm just asking just generally about how all this has been handled. And we've heard them on the radio and we've seen them on the TV. And they've been crying and they're upset. And they've waited decades. And I'm wondering, are you proud of how the government has handled this? Do you think the government should apologise for its handling of it over the last couple of months and for the added distress that these women and survivors of the mother and baby homes have been put through?
Well, look, I think, again, as I say, on the issue of the leak, I have apologised for that. I'm always aware that we need to do better and we need to do our very best for the victims of institutional abuse. And as I say, my focus and the way I feel I can assist people best is in terms of delivering on each of these 22 action points and delivering on the issues that survivors in their engagement with me have indicated they want to see done.
That was Minister for Children Roger Cogorman speaking to me a little earlier.